From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to the world's most listened to late night talk show, Coast to Coast AM. We'll have open lines for you later this hour. Next hour, mysterious things in the sky, UFO phenomena. What was going over the old Soviet Union with Philip Mantle? Well, the summer of this year was the second warmest June to August period here in the United States since records began in 1895, according to scientists. But it did not beat the record temperature set in the summer of 1936. That was the hottest ever recorded. Interesting about global warming, though, isn't it? In 1936, we didn't have nearly the amount of vehicles and emissions going into the atmosphere that we do today. I still believe that we're dealing with a cycle. So much so, a NASA satellite has documented startling changes in Arctic sea ice cover between 2004 and 2005. The extent of perennial ice, which is thick ice, which remains all year round, declined by 14%, losing an area the size of Pakistan or Turkey. The drastic shrinkage may relate partly to unusual wind patterns found in 2005, though rising temperatures in the Arctic could also be a factor. Well, this is indeed a sign of the times, and this is sad news to report. The Ford Motor Company is offering buyouts to 75,000, not 7,500, 75,000 union workers in a bid to slash costs and rein in growing losses in its core North American auto operations. UAW Vice President Bob King said in an email release that the union was deeply concerned about Ford's declining share of the U.S. auto market. The development came after Ford said details of its accelerated turnaround plan called Way Forward will be unveiled early Friday. This is drastic. They're talking about giving them buyouts depending on how long they worked at Ford. Anywhere from $35,000 to $140,000 to each person. But when you're used to, you know, a pretty good wage every year, that's not going to last long. Jesse Sullivan, by the way, has two prosthetic arms, but he can climb a ladder at his house. He can roll a fresh paint of coat. He can use a weed whacker. He can bend his elbow, rotate his forearm to guide any machine. He's even mastered a very sensitive maneuver, hugging his grandchildren, all because of a bionic device controlled by his brain, an amazing piece of machinery. Doctors describe Sullivan as the first amputee with thought-controlled artificial limbs. Researchers encouraged Sullivan, who became an amputee in an industrial accident. They said, "There's no need to go easy on this experiment. Go for it," and he has. He's been so rough with the bionic arm that it has broken, including once when he pulled the end off, starting the lawnmower. But he just keeps at it. Some 411 U.S. troops in Iraq and 37 in Afghanistan have had wounds that cost them at least one limb. This may help them. Hate-filled web postings by the Montreal College gunmen showed bitterness but no real motive for the shooting rampage Wednesday that killed one woman and injured 19 other people. Kim Veer Gill, that's his name, killed himself with a shot to the head after firing on students at Dawson College. Police initially said that Gill was killed by the officers, but according to an autopsy report, Gill apparently turned a gun on himself after the officers shot him in the arm. Investigators are scrutinizing entries made by Gill on a website called vampirefreaks.com, including pictures of the man dressed in black, posing with guns and a knife. Well, mark my word, this is going to become a huge story. Muslim leaders condemned Pope Benedict over comments he apparently made about Islam on a visit to Germany and demanded his apology. The head of the Egyptian-based Muslim Brotherhood called on Islamic countries to threaten to break off relations with the Vatican unless the pontiff withdrew his remarks. A top religious figure in Turkey suggested the Pope should reconsider a trip he is planning to Turkey later this year. The Vatican issued a statement to say the Pope had never meant to offend Islam. In his speech at a university, Benedict quoted criticism of Islam and the Prophet Muhammad by a 14th century emperor who wrote that everything Muhammad brought was evil and inhuman, such as command to spread the by the sword the faith that he preached. And the Pope just was using some of the quotes. This is going to be a major story, though. Al-Qaeda appears to be preparing for a large-scale terrorist attack on Israeli and U.N. forces in southern Lebanon. According to some Western and Lebanese intelligence sources, Al-Qaeda has already named a veteran Middle Easterner, his 56-year-old by the name of Abu Rush al-Mikati. He is going to organize the attacks, they say. A U.S. Senate committee has defied President George W. Bush by approving legislation to set up trials for foreign terrorism suspects. The panel voted 15-9 to back the bill, which Mr. Bush has vowed to block. Ex-Secretary of State Colin Powell has backed Republicans opposing the legislation sponsored by Mr. Bush that would allow military tribunals at Guantanamo. The senators agreed that and argued that Mr. Bush's proposals would effectively redefine the Geneva Conventions to allow harsh treatment of detainees held at the Guantanamo Bay camp in Cuba. In Nevada, the widow of a soldier killed in Afghanistan wants state approval to place a Wiccan religious symbol on his memorial plaque, something the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs had refused to do, but they are going to allow this. Sergeant Patrick Stewart, a 34-year-old, was killed in Afghanistan last summer when a rocket-propelled grenade struck his helicopter. He was awarded the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart. And his mother has been able to get this plaque now. They're going to put it up for him. They believe in the Wiccan religion. And for a long time, I did not know too much about the Wiccan religion. And then a few years ago, I studied it, talked to some of them, and I realized that they are not practicing the Black Mass. They are not Satanists, as so many people believe. They believe in God. They believe in God just like you, except they just believe that God has a male and female gender. Simple as that. But they believe in God. They're wonderful people. So I guess when you're ever in doubt about something, begin to study it first. Men, apparently, this is not coming from me, are more intelligent than women, according to new research. Two leading scientists, who both happen to be men, say that male IQs are 3.63 points higher than females. A psychologist claims that this explains the glass ceiling phenomenon, why men get promoted over women. He said the study proves more men reach the top of their careers because they are smarter and not because of sex discrimination. The professor went on to analyze 100,000 aptitude tests taken by 17 and 18-year-olds of both sexes, and he said men were more intelligent throughout the entire distribution of scores in every level of family income, for every level of father's and mother's education, and for each and every one of seven ethnic groups. Well, I don't have any scientific proof to back up what I'm about ready to say. I think that's bunk. I think women are equally, if not more, smarter than men. Thousands of people are flocking to a Malaysian village to see a ghost tree, which has reportedly sprouted a human face. Markings on a 5-meter-tall nut tree clearly resemble human eyes, teeth, and a nose. 54-year-old man spotted the curves emerging a month ago, said that there is a resemblance to a human face, and they can't understand what's going on. I wonder if that tree somehow gobbled up somebody who was walking by. A farm in Wisconsin is quickly becoming hallowed ground for American Indians with the birth of its third white buffalo. Many of the tribes believe that this could bring good fortune and peace. The International Space Station has unfurled a new set of solar wings despite a software glitch that cast early doubt on the entire activity. Two shimmering solar arrays reached their full wingspan of about 240 feet as they extended from the space station's new Port 4 truss that the astronauts put in. And also the largest planet ever found orbiting another star, they say, is so puffy it would float on water, according to astronomers. I don't know, maybe it's made out of styrofoam. But in a moment, we're going to check in with Coast to Coast AM science advisor and head of the EnterpriseMission.com, Richard C. Hoagland, to get his take on all of this and the Mars orbiter that's going around the planet Mars. We'll be back. And the Puffy Planet story is up there on the coasttocoastam.com website feature story. Richard C. Hoagland talking about not being so puffy. How are you, Richard?
I'm pretty good, George. How are you?
Always looking for the right segue, but that one wasn't going to work for you.
That's kind of a miss, yes.
Indeed. Hey, gosh, lots going on in space. You got the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. You've got the shuttle astronauts up there at the ISS, and now this puffy planet. What do you want to talk about first?
And some weird stuff here on Earth. Let's not forget Earth.
Well, that's true.
Okay, let's start with the planet, because this is so cool, because it really is a confirmation of the hyperdimensional model that I've been writing about and publishing on for many, many years. The classic line that you quoted is that they find it a mystery. Why is it so big?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so fluffy? Kind of reminds you of the companion of the Energizer Bunny.
Yeah, it does.
Many, many years ago, back about 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, they found a whole new class of planets. Jeff Marcy, who is an astronomer at the University of San Francisco that I'm going to be speaking with and to at a conference following Joshua Tree in middle October down at the University of California at Irvine. Jeff Marcy was one of the first to start finding these planets using what are called Doppler techniques, where you watch the light from the star, you break it up into component colors, you see how the colors slosh back and forth, and you can actually detect like a train on a track, you know, when the whistle goes away, it goes down in frequency.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You can detect the motion of the star caused by the invisible planet gravitationally swinging it around in orbit. This planet, this weirdy, was found by a totally different technique. It was found by a network of telescopes called HAT, H-A-T. We will make no comments about taking our head off to the astronomers tonight.
Good point.
It's the Hungarian Automated Telescope Network, which has four telescopes, the Smithsonian up at Harvard in Massachusetts and another set out in Hawaii. And what they do is they watch with Nikon cameras and fairly small lenses and CCDs, which are the chips that are found in all the digital cameras
Sure.
now. They watch night after night in the little automated observatories and roll off their roofs and point their telescopes at the sky using sky charts and the computer. They watch the light of the star, the brightness of the star, and to see if it winks. Now, normally there's star twinkle caused by the atmosphere. But if there's an object orbiting a star that crosses in front of the star's disk, depending upon its size and distance, it will cause the star to lose a little bit of light, a few percentage points, and then come back up, you know, in a few hours later. If they watch that over several nights or several weeks or several months or several years, you could plot the pattern of the objects orbiting the star basically via these eclipses. These are eclipses where you can't see the star like the sun and the body going across it like the moon, but you can tell from the light drop and then, you know, when it regains light, that something has eclipsed and then passed by. So that's how this star was noted as being unusual and having this object orbiting around it. It's now one of 11 planets found with this technique, separate from Marcy's Doppler technique. And it's the second of two planets found to be too big for their britches.
Well, what do they mean by it's fluffy? I mean,
well, there are certain things called equations of state, where if you know the mass of the planet and you know its composition, you can run a computer calculation which should give you the size. But when they compare that calculated theoretical dimension against the actual dimension, watching when the light falls and comes back up, this planet is something like 24% bigger than theory of planets should have it be. And the other planet they found this way, which has a very interesting name, which if I scroll down here I can give to you, it's very sexy, HD209458B.
That's nice.
HD stands for the Henry Draper Catalog at Harvard. It also is found to be a fluffy planet. Now, 2 out of 11, you got a streak going here, which means it's not an anomaly. It's not a fluke. It's not some weird thing. It's part of the how do you make planets. So they can't understand why it's so big and so light and dense. And I know the thing at the top of the show you talked about, it's light enough to float on water. It's about 25% the density of water.
That's amazing.
But Saturn, in our own planetary system, is 70% the density of water, and anything less than the density of water will float on water. So that's all we've been said in the textbooks. If you could find an ocean big enough, yeah, really, you could float Saturn in a bathtub. Well, this planet, you would float higher, about three times higher, and they're scratching their heads trying to figure out how it can be so big, and there's a very obvious, simple reason, which in the middle of the Harvard press release, actually, let me read it here. It says Cirrus had already considered a number of possibilities to explain the large size of HD 209458b, but so far without success. The only way to puff these giant planets beyond the size calculated from the planetary structure equations would be to supply additional heat to their interiors. Simply heating the surface doesn't work because of proximity. If it can work at all close and transit giant planets should be expanded, but only two of them are. So what we have are planets that somehow have a secret new source of energy, George, coming out from inside, like Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune in our own solar system. So our solution to their mystery is its hyperdimensional physics. The energy is coming in from another dimension into these specific planets because they have the conditions appropriate for blowing themselves up, inflating themselves with this interior heat. And the other planets they've looked at don't fit those requirements.
Brilliant, Richard. And one day maybe we'll tap into this energy source.
Well, that's the big thing. In fact, we see it in operation here on Earth. Another NASA story this week, you like the segue?
Yeah.
Had to do with the launch of a new space mission to measure the shrinking polar caps of Earth. The ice caps are shrinking. Art, many years ago, put up on the web side-by-side comparisons of, you know, glaciers and
ice. Yeah, I remember that. Pretty dramatic.
Oh, incredibly dramatic. Now they've announced that the shrinkage is going on even in the winter, okay? And they're blaming global warming, and, of course, that's not what's going on. It's part of, as you said many times, and Art has hinted at, a big natural cycle. Again, it's part of the hyperdimensional cycle, which I'm going to be talking about intensively at the Joshua Tree Conference, and then a week later at Walter Crittenden's CPAC conference at the University of California at Irvine, because this hyperdimensional model, this hyperdimensional cycle, explains so many interesting weirdnesses that we're going to deal with at both these conferences as the potential answer for the 2012 problem at ours and the potential answer for what's called the Yuga cycle problem at Walter's, which is only a week later and has people like John West and Bob Schock and, as I said, Jeff Marcy. We're going to have an incredibly interesting time. And I've invited Walter Crittenden to come on Sunday night when you're supposed to be there.
Oh, he's a home run, by the way.
He's a former guest on Coast. He's a bright guy. He has basically been the leader now in proposing that the Earth is part of the Earth. The solar system, the sun and our solar system, are part of a binary star system, which could explain some of the strange cycles that we go through on this planet, including the current one via the HD model, that things seem to be getting warmer not only on this planet, but all over the solar system. Mars is losing its ice caps because of some heating. I've talked about the numbers for Jupiter and Saturn and the expanded activity and energy. Venus is doing bizarre things that indicate extraordinary new energy coming from somewhere. So this planetary discovery, George, is kind of like exactly what astronomers need to kick them in a delicate part of their anatomy to get them to wake up that there's other energy sources besides sunlight and starlight, and they have to look to their models of the ether and where energy could come from, and that will lead them ultimately back to the idea of other dimensions.
And that's a whole show by itself, Richard, when we talk about was it William Reich who was looking for orgon?
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And my friend Gene Maloff, who before he died, absolutely as a physicist, he had like, 2 or 3 degrees, he told me categorically that the current models are inadequate, and that the idea of energy coming from the ether by way of some other dimension is absolutely de rigueur now and needs to be examined. And so I would really look forward to doing, in Gene's memory, a show where we can at leisure get into the details and how this works and how we can harness it. Remember that story a few weeks ago about the Irish company that developed this engine that runs magnetically forever?
Yes.
We need to do that.
We're looking for him.
Well, you need to talk to the CEO. We could ask him some very interesting questions. I think I know how it works because I've seen this before with Gene in the Midwest. We went to an inventor and we looked at his gadget, and I think hyperdimensionally I can explain how it works. And wouldn't it be wonderful with rising gas prices and wars over oil if we could really give this planet some other source of technological mastery of electricity so we can get off the oil kick?
And it might save some of these jobs that we're losing every day. Hey, Richard, can we keep you
alive.
Can we keep you for five more minutes? I want to talk about the shuttle.
Sure can.
And the MRO that's just now orbiting Mars. We'll do that. We're going to keep Richard C. Hoagland for about 5 minutes more, and then we'll go to open lines. So the phone numbers for open lines, west of the Rockies, 800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, 800-825-5033. First-time caller line is 818-501-4721. And the wild card line is 818-501-4109. If you're still interested in Richard's Joshua Tree Conference, you can go to his website at enterprisemission.com. If you don't have a computer, some people don't, you can call 1-800-900-7030. 1-800-900-7030. Indeed. Let's bring in Richard C. Hoagland now. We're going to talk about the space shuttle Atlantis. They're up there, the astronauts, doing a very good job, even though they lost a bolt. Richard, things seem to be going okay up there.
You know, you kind of get tired of the mainstream press making such a big deal out of idiocy. They actually lost two bolts, and it was absolutely no fault of their own. Imagine if you had to change your tire, George, wearing a suit puffed up with several dozen pounds of pressure inside, wearing gloves that are like little sausage balloons, wearing a helmet where you can't see more than 30 or 40 degrees left or right, in a place where the sunlight is totally unfiltered, so you have brilliant reflections requiring you to have a visor, a gold visor, which cuts down the light and cuts down visibility and discrimination of shadows, and then try putting together a skyscraper moving along at 18,000 miles an hour, where day and night follow every 90 minutes.
And just a few guys doing it.
Exactly. You know, you don't have a whole crew. You got two people out there. I mean, this stuff is designed on the ground, so that didn't happen. It turns out it was a design flaw, and even that is being harsh because you're dealing in an environment where little things become important. For instance, these guys have to be tethered to the station, and I say guys, you know, Heidi Piper will kill me if I keep saying guys.
Right.
They have to be tethered with steel wires coated with Teflon so that in case they lose a handhold, they don't float off and die. Because there'd be no way to move the station, move the shuttle in time to go get them if they were to drift off, so they have these tethers. Well, the tethers, they have dual tethers, backup, prime and backup. No single point failure, NASA's mantra, at least in terms of some launches it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, one of these tethers apparently dragged across the cover with the bolts while Steve McLean was, you know, unscrewing the gadget he was supposed to be unscrewing so that the overall truss would eventually be able to rotate. When he went to put it back on, he reported, wait a minute, Houston, there's one bolt missing. Well, these bolts are held on with little clamps, little clips on the back side. And so the tether dragging across it inadvertently severed the clip, moved it slightly with friction. It then released the washer and the bolt, which floated off in some direction. And the press made a huge deal about, oh, NASA makes errors and astronauts fumble and slippery fingers. And frankly, it's crap. These guys are heroes. They're risking their life out there and women. And they should be vaunted for achieving an almost impossible, almost 150% perfect mission so far in erecting this huge solar panel, the new one. It will be fully in place in the next flight during December when Atlantis goes up again. I'm sorry, Discovery on flight 116 and moves another truss over so they can unfurl the full rotation ability of this truss to now double the power capability of the space station. I mean, this is like assembling, as I said, wrapped in a tire, inflated several hundred times, a skyscraper with only two guys at any one time.
It's amazing. And I guess the fuel cell, the one that we were concerned about, is holding up okay.
So far, that little pump is ticking along on two cycles. It looks like it's good. There have been a number of mysterious electronic glitches through the electrical system of the orbiter, George. You were one of the few people,
yep,
apart from our audience, that knows what that might mean. I noted as they were coming into dock that night at the ground, Houston radioed up a whole list of circuit breakers they wanted the astronauts to pull before docking. And I'm trying to find out from my sources if this is what I think it means, meaning that there are weird things happening. They're called transients, where you get a little blip in electrical flow, and you're not quite sure where it came from. These shuttles are museum pieces. They need to be retired. These people deserve the very best in space transportation technology. that we can give them, because they're risking their lives for us and the future of this planet. And so we got to retire the shuttle. We have to move on to the next phase. And I will tell you in a future program, George, about something that I'm working on here at Enterprise that could revolutionize spaceflight propulsion if, in fact, it works.
Excellent. And very briefly, when do we start our campaign to get them to take some pictures of Cydonia with the MRO?
When we have time.
Okay.
MRO on the night of September 11th. September 11th, George, they put this into the final orbit.
Yep.
Now, you don't believe in coincidence, right?
No, I don't.
That's previous, right. Mars mission, Mars Global Surveyor, back in 1997, was also put into its final orbit on September 11th.
Now, that's just strange,
isn't
it?
Think about that.
Hey, Richard, thanks for the updates.
My pleasure, friend.
Appreciate it. We'll be back in a moment now with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to the open lines now. And again, thanks to Richard C. Hoagland, EnterpriseMission.com, constantly monitoring the rapidly breaking science news for us. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Carter. Calling from Louisiana.
Hey, Carter, welcome.
Thank you. I remember hearing, listening to the program, been a few months ago, when they were talking about a space probe, and if I understood them correctly, they were going to try to crash it into a comet to get samples or readings or something from it.
Yes, they did that.
Okay, and I never heard anything else about it. I was curious about what happened.
They took a chunk out of it. They did crash it, and I don't think the results have really been made that well known in public yet. But it did work.
Oh, okay.
And then the Japanese were trying to do one, and they were going to land, pick up some samples, and come back again. That one didn't work.
Didn't work.
No.
Okay.
But they did. They blew up part of this asteroid, and got some of the dust, and they brought it back. And there was another one. I don't think it was the same. There was another one that crashed in the desert. See if Richard knows that for me. Nope, he doesn't have that one for me. Okay, but that's what happened. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi, this is Tammy. I'm from Medford, Oregon.
Hi.
I just wanted to ask you about, numbers and, seeing them in, dreams. And
what do you mean, numbers?
Seeing, triple digits.
Like what? Which ones? They all have different meanings.
The number
333? 333 is not a very good series of numbers. They say that's the devil's series of numbers.
Okay.
What kind of dreams do you see it in? Are they evil dreams, bad dreams?
No, very peaceful dreams where I have, the most beautiful feeling, I've ever experienced. And then, I wake up and then I see the number.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what to do. Go to numberslady.com. And look up some of the information she's got there about numbers. But we've always been told that 333 is not a great series of numbers. Thanks for your call. West of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Good evening.
Hi.
Yeah.
I'm calling in regard to, I wanted to mention some points as to why I never believed the government's conspiracy theory about 9/11 from the very beginning. It has to do with history long before 9/11. Starting with the Kennedy assassination, of course, I had friends who collected stuff on that.
Mm-hmm.
I paid some attention to it. But then in 1965, I was working for the Defense Supply Agency, and there was a guy there who was a naturalized American from Holland, and his father was a Dutch submarine commander during World War II and found himself in the middle of the Pacific in the middle of the Japanese fleet, which was obviously headed for Pearl Harbor, and he radioed back to his headquarters. And in Jim Maher's book, Rule by Secrecy,
yes,
one of the warnings that FDR had was from the Dutch embassy. And then later, we had the Pueblo event, and recently there was a book published about the Pueblo that where the guy interviewed all the crew just a couple years ago, and they said that one of the strange things that happened, they were stationed at that same CIA spy base that Lee Harvey Oswald was stationed at, but not quite at the same mm-hmm. time. But onto their little boat, the Pueblo, was loaded for some unknown reason 2,000 pounds of high-tech, super-secret documents and diagrams and charts. About of that material, only about 5% pertain to their assignment or anything they did.
What were they doing with it?
Well, they didn't do anything with it, but they were ordered to go out to a certain spot off the North Korea coast to start observing, you know, which is what they normally did. And as soon as they got to the appointed spot, the North Koreans were waiting for them and jumped them. Obviously, the point was these documents and manuals, which had to do with like the KH-11 spy satellite and things like that, was a technology handover to the Soviets, because that's exactly where it went.
That's, all right. That's amazing.
Now, yes, but that's in the book. Now, let's go forward a little to the attack on the USS Liberty, which turned out to be the Israelis. When that happened, well, first of all, LBJ had foreknowledge of it, and he and McNamara had dispatched two B-52s with atomic bombs to bomb Egypt. And when the press found out that it was the Israelis that attacked the Liberty, LBJ had to order those back. Well, McNamara actually ordered those planes back to their base. And LBJ absolutely screamed over the phone that the aircraft carriers that was not that far away were ordered back to land on their aircraft carrier and could not defend the Liberty.
All right, now let's
by Admiral Moore a month or two before
right.
he died.
Let's jump start now to 9/11 and why. Is it based on the past? That's why you don't believe the version?
Well, I think it's suspicious. There's more than that. In 1968, we gave the air bearings to the Russians, which allowed them to MIRV their missiles. In 1966, Nelson Rockefeller went to visit Moscow, and while he was there, Khrushchev, who had gone soft, was thrown out, and Brezhnev, the hardliner, was put in. The Illuminati, of which the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Warburgs are the main members of, are making trillions from defense spending, and they didn't want that slowed down.
Well, hallelujah. Finally, somebody like you admits to the fact that the Illuminati's really running the game here.
Well, they always have been, and that's a source of terrorism, not the poor Arabs. They haven't got... They're so infiltrated with spies from the Mossad and from the British or what have you, they can't get anything going without people knowing them. So it's all a dirty game.
But you also know that those so-called poor Arabs are being betrayed by some of their own people.
Well, yeah, because some of their own people aren't even true ethnic Arabs.
Well, even if they are ethnic Arabs, they're all involved for money. And that's what this whole thing is all about, money. And they're all doing it, taking advantage of everybody. And one day, the world is going to wake up and find out. Thanks. East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. The guy's done some work. Hello there.
George.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Greg from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Greg. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you? Just call and say enjoy your show. You've been doing a good job. I have two questions to ask you.
Yeah.
First question is, when are you going to have discussion, roundtable discussion with J.C., the Devil Chandler, Ross Mitchell, and the Preacher on?
How did you fit Ross Mitchell into that?
Well, I'd like to have Ross in there. Ross is a good announcer.
Yeah, but he's not he's not part of the religious group.
Yeah. Well, just to get his.
But anyways, we did talk to JC about going toe to toe with the Devil Channeler. He doesn't want to do that.
Uh-huh.
He claims he will rip the Devil Channeler to shreds, but he does want to go against Oscar. You've heard Oscar on the program before?
Yes.
Problem is, we have no idea where Oscar is or what Oscar is.
Okay.
But he wants to do but we're working on something.
Okay. You're not sure when that'll be on then?
No, no date set yet.
Okay. The other thing was me and a coworker had a experience tonight. A guy had come in. Said he had was drinking, and he was on medication, and he said he gave us, he showed a note. It was he wanted to commit suicide.
Oh, gosh. And when you say came in where?
Convenience store.
Okay.
And it was kind of surprised. Never had this experience before.
Were you guys behind a glass window, or he was right there with you?
No, it was with Doug. He was on the running a register, and I was about ready to start my shift.
Oh man, what did you guys do?
He called paramedic.
They show up right away?
Yeah, and the police came too.
Did they arrest the guy or just kind of take him away?
No, they just it was a pretty calm situation. He took, you know, it went real easy.
Checked him out to make sure he wasn't carrying a weapon or something like that?
No, they didn't check that. Just
you're kidding me.
Yeah, no, they didn't do that, George.
You would think that would be one of the first things they would do.
I know.
I mean, did they just leave and the guy walked away?
No, they took him, took his, you know, readings, pulse and stuff, and they took him in an ambulance.
Oh, they did take him away. Okay, for a little observation. All right, thanks. Appreciate it. I'll let you know if we get a JC show with Oscar or whomever, you'll have enough time to prepare. At least a few days. Wildcard line, you're up. It's your turn. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about was this morning I was listening to the BBC news, and there was this banker examiner. His name is, I believe, Koskov or something like that. He was assassinated. Hitman style, I guess, on the streets of Moscow.
Yeah, this is the Russian. They did him in. I know it. They're going crazy over there over this thing.
Yeah, the thing of it is, throughout the whole report, I never heard anything about them launching an investigation to find out who did it, you know?
Oh, they're looking. No, they are.
Yeah.
The Russians work in very strange ways.
I'm sure they do. The other thing I wanted to ask you about is one time I called in and talked to Art Bell about a mummy that was dug up in Pakistan who was supposedly 5,000 years old, and that would predate the 18th dynasty of Egypt, you know, if it was truly that old. And it looked like a ruler, okay, a female ruler, and she was holding a clay tablet with about 15 lines of script that looked like cuneiform, okay? But they said that the language was unintelligible and couldn't be translated by anyone. And I mentioned that Zechariah Sitchin could possibly crack the code on that tablet.
You think it might be Sumerian?
I think that it's earlier. It's around the same time period as Sumerian, if it is 5,000.
Oh, that would be fascinating, especially.
But then a theory I would have as if they got the carbon dating wrong, because they had just unearthed the mummy, and they showed it, you know, shortly after being found, and I wouldn't think they'd have the time to do any kind of exhaustive analysis on it before the news report came out. It was on the Fox News Channel, by the way, back on August the 28th, 2001. Okay. So anyway, I was thinking, you know, that possibly this could be the Queen of Sheba. She had a crown on her head.
Good point. It may be.
And because although she would have come along a little later, you know, she was known to have traveled the known world. And since the Bible doesn't state what was her fate, she could have died during her travels in that area.
I think some archaeologists would just marvel at the fact that I believe civilizations are much older than what they've thought they were. I subscribe to Michael Cremo's theories that this planet might have had changes and evolutionary changes over millions and millions of years. We might have had civilizations that had the ability to fly, as some of the scriptures say. I think that was possible. We'll be back in a moment with our guest Philip Mantle, Mysterious Sky, Soviet UFO Phenomenon.